ever since our voyage of love began. Your touch has thrilled me like the rush of the wind, and your arms have held me safe from a rolling sea. There's always been a quiet place to harbor you and me.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the One Love World Music Party Cruise, Friday, May 27th on the Portland Spirit. Boarding takes place at 10:30 p.m. The One Love World Music Party Cruise features Portland reggae band Roots Revolution and DJ Solo Afrikaan and Della playing a mix of reggae, salsa, highlife, afrobeat, dancehall, R&B, hip-hop, reggaeton, funk, and more. This is a 21 and over event. Again, that's the One Love World Music Party Cruise, Friday, May 27th on the Portland Spirit. Boarding takes place at 10:30 p.m. on the west side of the Willamette River by the Salmon Street Fountain. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. And here's what we have coming up for you this morning on KBOO. First, it's Veterans Voice. Your host, Marvin, talks about books, articles, and movies on the war in Vietnam. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. And at 10:15, we got Flashpoints. Today, Pablo Alvarado of the National Day Labor Organizing Network talks about the work of day labor centers across the country. And we'll also hear excerpts from the new Michael Moore film, Where to Invade Next. And thank you, KBOO members, once again for your wonderful support during our spring membership drives. You really make KBOO happen, and we appreciate that. Okay, it's time for Veterans Voice.
Well, how do you do, Private Willie McBride? Do you mind if I sit here down by your graveside, and I'll rest for a while in the warm summer sun? I've been walking all day, Lord, and I'm nearly done. And I see by your gravestone you were only 19 when you joined the glorious fallen in 1916. Well, I hope you died quick, and I hope you died clean. Or Willie McBride, was it slow and obscene? Did they beat the drums slowly? Did they sound the fife lowly? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered ye down? Did the bugles sing the last post in chorus? The pipes play the flutes of the forest. And did you leave a wife or a sweetheart behind? In some faithful heart is your memory enshrined. And though you died back in 1916, to that loyal heart are you forever 19? Or are you a stranger without even a name, forever enshrined behind some glass pane? in an old photograph torn and tattered and stained and fade into yellow in a brown leather frame. Did they beat the drum slowly? Did they sound the fife lowly? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered you down? Did the bugles sing the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes of the forest? Well, the sun's shining now on these green fields of France. The warm wind blows gently and the red poppies dance. The trenches have vanished long under the plough. No gas and no barbed wire, no guns firing now. But here in this graveyard, it's still no man's land. The countless white crosses in Ute witnessed to man's blind indifference to his fellow man, and a whole generation who were butchered and damned. Did they beat the drum slowly? Did they sound the fife lowly? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered you down? Did the bugles sing the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes of the forest? And I can't help but wonder now, Willie McBride, do all those who lie here know why they died? Did you really believe them when they told you the cause? Did you really believe that this war would end wars? Well, the suffering, the sorrow, the glory, the shame, the killing, the dying, it was all done in vain. For Willie McBride, it all happened again, and again, and again, and again, and again. Did they beat the drum slowly? Did they sound the fife lowly? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered you down? Did the bugles sing the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes of the forest? Did the bugles sing the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes or the forest?
Welcome to Veteran Voiced Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland and Northwest Oregon, 91.9 FM Hood River in the Columbia River Gorge, plus 104.3 FM Corvallis and the Willamette Valley. You can also hear this wonderful station on the World Wide Web at kboo.fm. And if you want to hear some of our earlier shows, you can go to kboo.fm/Veterans Voice. That's one word, Veterans Voice. I'm Marvin, and I played that song because, people kind of forget what war's about. But I'm going to talk about some stuff today about war and how we get into them and how we're usually lied into them, like the Vietnam War, how we got lied into the Vietnam War. I'm going to have someone on the show next month to help me out, like, you know, a co-host that'll be helping me out starting next month, and that's Angie. Angie's coming back. She'll be back next month, and she'll be back on the show with me. She's moving back up from California, so Angie will be back, and that's a great thing to hear. And she's a great person, and I'm glad she's coming back. I want to something I saw in the paper, and I was really interested. It says block removed. Senate confirms new Army Secretary, and Senate confirmed Eric K. Fanning on Tuesday to be the next Secretary of the Army, making him the highest-ranking openly gay official ever at the Pentagon. And I thought that was kind of interesting. That they chose him. I'm glad that a gay person has got that high of a rank, but you know, I'm just wondering why now. And well, I guess we'll find out. But I'm glad a gay person has got that high up in the government. So that's a good one. And I was thinking about, you know, I've got a list of books and stuff that I want to talk about. And, you know, when people talk about the war in Vietnam, they usually think about the 1960s, that the Tet Offensive and landing of the Marines at Da Nang and all of that. And they usually talk about that as the Vietnam War. But the United States was involved in Vietnam a long time before that. And one of the first Americans to send people to Vietnam was way, way before that. It was Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson sent a ship to Vietnam because they had a certain kind of rice that made, they could do two crops in a year with this new rice. And he's the first American that really made contact with Vietnam, and that was Thomas Jefferson. So that was a way, way back. But when we go back and talk about the war that the United States talk about, the first American soldier killed in Vietnam was in 1945. He was killed in 1945, and it was a Lieutenant Colonel Peter Dewey, and he was an advisor for the French, and he was he was killed while he was serving with the French troops. And another and that was in the North. He was killed in the North. The first American killed in the South was in 1955, and they were advisors to the South Vietnamese government in November of 1955. It was a major and a sergeant that were killed. So the United States has been there. The United States has been involved in Vietnam for a long, long time, And you talk about why did we get involved in that? And one of the things is that after World War II, France was really in a bad problem. They'd been beat up pretty bad during the war. They were just really on their knees economically, and so they needed money. And the United States was really afraid that Russia was going to move right into Western Europe. And so they wanted to strengthen all of the groups in Western Europe to fight against the Soviets, so the Soviets couldn't control that area. And so they gave Vietnam back to the French, even though the Vietnamese had helped the Americans during the war. They had helped. They fought the Japanese. The Vietnamese fought the Japanese. They helped get down to American pilots. They did all this thinking that when the war is over, they're going to be like other countries. They're going to be free, and they're going to have their country back. Well, it didn't turn out that way. The United States did not back them They did not back them. They backed the French, and the French came back in and just terrorized the country. And then, of course, the war against the French started, and the Vietnamese finally beat them at the Battle of Dien Bien Phu. And that's when their country got cut in half. And the American people were really unhappy with, they really didn't understand, you know, why the United States was in helping the French. And they were paying about, the Americans were paying about 80 to 90% of the war in material and in monies to helping the French. And Eisenhower had to come up with a reason to the American people about why we're spending so much money in Vietnam and why we're getting Americans killed. And he came up in April 7th of 1954. Eisenhower did a speech, and that speech is when he came up with a domino theory. And a domino theory was, if the communists takes over Vietnam, that'll just knock the dominoes over, and they'll take over everything. They'll take over Thailand and Cambodia and Laos, and they'll end up going down into the Philippines, and then they'll go down into Australia and all of that. That was one of the things that he was saying. You know, that was the domino theory. And he also came up with this other reason. It made a lot more sense. And then President Eisenhower said, the reason Vietnam was significant to the United States was, first, economic importance, the specific value of the locality in its production of materials that the world needs, materials such as rubber, jute, and sulfur. So he just came right out and said that we're going to war over their natural resources, because we're going to take their natural resources. And I remember one time talking to this, he had been an ARVN, this Army Republic of Vietnam, the South Vietnamese soldier one time. And he was really, really angry with the United States. First, because we pulled out and left him there. And the second one is, he said, you stole our natural resources. He says, you came in there and you took our diamonds, our gold. He said, gold. You took our gold. You took our tungsten. You took all this stuff, he said. And he was very, very angry about that. And like I was saying, they needed France to block the Soviet Union and the communists from going into the western part. And then the war really progressed after the French were beat at Dien Bien Phu. That's when the United States really started actively going after the Vietnamese. They were running secret missions up the coast to overthrow the government. The United States was supporting them. They were buying boats for the South Vietnamese to go up into North Vietnam and attack the North Vietnamese. It got to a point where Americans were going with them. They were driving these boats. They were called nasty boats, and they had bought them, I think, from Finland or Sweden. And they were really, really fast boats. And the Vietnamese kept telling them, you know, you're coming into our waters, you're doing this, you know, and stay out of our waters. And that's when the Gulf of Tonkin incident happened. And the Gulf of Tonkin is what really got us involved in Vietnam. And what the Gulf of Tonkin incident was, and that was in August of 1964, the United States has sent a spy ship, it was called the Maddox, USS Maddox, into the Gulf of Tonkin. And that's off the coast of the northern part of Vietnam. And what they were doing, they were trying to get the Vietnamese to turn on their radar. They wanted to get a hold of their radar sites so they could, in case they were going to invade the north, they would know exactly where these radar sites were. And they were also intercepting the messages that the North Vietnamese troops were sending back and forth to each other. And what happened on August 2nd, the DeSoto, the the South Vietnamese had just done some raids against the North Vietnamese. And when they saw this the American ship, the Maddox, come into the Gulf in close to the limit, they thought that ship was part of the attacks on their country. And so what they did, they sent some torpedo boats out to go to see what was going on, to see if the Maddox was part of the attack upon their land. And what happened, which the Americans didn't exactly tell everybody, was when these boats were coming at them, the United States fired. They fired the first rounds at these ships. The United States fired the first shots to really start the war in Vietnam from the USS Maddox at these ships that never fired on the Americans until the Americans fired on them, and that was of August of 1964, and they destroyed a couple of the ships and I think the Maddox may have gotten hit once. But the United States did fire the first shots, and Vietnam did not fire the first shots. And on the 4th, they brought in another ship, the Turner Joy, in. And that's really when everything got crazy, because the United States had in Phu Bai, Vietnam, up by the DMZ, they had a listening post, NSA and the Army listening post, and they were listening and copying these messages that the Vietnamese were coming back and forth and talking about what was going on. And the sad part about it was that they intercepted them, they decoded them, and they interpreted them, and they got it wrong. They got it completely wrong. And they sent this flash message back to the United States saying that they were going to attack again and all this. But the sad part about it was that the Philippines, the listening post in the Philippines, was doing the same thing. They got that same message, and they copied the message, and then they decoded the message and they read it, and they didn't send theirs flash because it didn't say they were going to attack again, and they got it wrong. They intercepted that, they broke that code, and they read it, and the man who was doing the interpreting, reading it, got it wrong. One word or two words, he got it wrong. And that is how the Gulf of Tonkin incident, and that brought the United States into the war, into Vietnam. And it was completely, completely wrong. They on two different messages that they got, the United States, they combined two different messages from two different times, and that's what Johnson used to get the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, which said that the Congress gave Johnson, boy, a blank check to do whatever he wanted against the people of Vietnam, and it's all because of they just didn't read those records right, those intercepted messages right. And that started the whole war. You know, 58,000 Americans died, 100 and some thousand wounded, almost 3 million Vietnamese dead. You know, out of that 3 million, 90 to 95% of them were civilians. Vietnam, we bombed Vietnam. We dropped more bombs on Vietnam than we ever dropped during World War II. We dropped more bombs on Vietnam than we ever dropped during World War II. And we bombed Laos what they did to the bombing to the people of Laos was just horrible. And they wonder why the Vietnamese people fought so hard. But the Gulf of Tonkin was, we fired the first rounds. We got the message wrong. Johnson uses it as an excuse to start the war in Vietnam. So that's a real problem. And then right, in 1965, in March of 1965 is when they sent the first combat troops into Vietnam, and that was the Marines. The Marines landed on a beach in Da Nang, which was south of the DMZ. The thing about it is they did a landing like they would do in World War II, where they would, you know, get on these landing crafts and they'd come onto the beach and everything. Well, here these guys were all, I've talked to guys that had been on that, and they said they was all worried, and they got on there and it was all combat ready, and they come in there and they drop down. And here was Vietnamese women and children offering them fruit and everything. They knew they were coming, and they were on the beach to welcome them. And so that was, you know, a war fought like that. And also one of the biggest changes, and I'll talk about it too, is the Tet Offensive of 1968. But before I do that, I want to talk about something else that was really a sad history to the American people. But first, I want to say, you know, a good man, Michael Ratner, for Center for Constitutional Rights, died. And he was a great guy. Michael Ratner was a wonderful guy. And he'd been on our show before years ago. And he was a hard-working man who wanted nothing but justice for people around the world. And Michael Ratner died. And that's really a sad thing. And also, Morley Safer, the newsman Morley Safer, died, and he was a reporter. He was a reporter in the war in Vietnam. He was actually a Canadian, but he did something that was so important. And what he did is, the Americans were going into these villages, and there'd be no Viet Cong, you know, the enemy would be in those villages or anything. And the Marines were burning these villages down. They were called Zippo brigades, because we had Zippo lighters in Vietnam, and most of the huts and everything in Vietnam were grass and wood, little shacks, poor people, just really, really dirt poor people. And they would burn their homes down. They would Zippo lighters. They would burn these down. And Morley Safer, he reported on it, and they showed it on the news, man. And the American people weren't very happy about it. And LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson, wanted him fired for doing that. But he didn't get fired. And I think that's really, really good, you know, that he did that. And he kind of changed the way the Americans were looking at the war in Vietnam, and also the Gulf of Tonkin and the Tet Offensive really started to change the people's mind. Not so much the Gulf of Tonkin, because that didn't come out till later, but the Tet Offensive. But before I get into that, I want to talk about something else real fast, if I can find my notes here on it. I know I can't. Tammy, will you play a song for me while I look for this? Play the second song. Play the second song for me while I look up my stuff here. Okay? And this is for my buddy.
Yeah. Bulger's and Nixon's coming. We're finally on our own. This summer I hear the drumming. For dead in Ohio. For dead in Ohio.
For
dead in Ohio.
For
dead in Ohio.
I'm in
for dead in Ohio.
I'm in war.
For dead in Ohio.
Why?
For dead in Ohio.
For
dead in Ohio.
And that's Ohio. On about 16 days ago, on May 4th, was a celebration of what happened. And at Kent State, Ohio, Kent State University in Kent, Ohio, on May 4th, 1970, the Ohio National Guard fired on students at Kent State. They killed 4 and they wounded 9. And and 2 of those people are friends of mine. One's Joe Lewis, lives in Scappoose, and the other one was Jim Russell. And Jim died, I think Jim died about 5 years ago, but he was one. Jim and Joe were 2 of the people that were wounded at Kent State. And I just want to, just to read their names, the people that were killed. Jeffrey Miller was 20 years old, and he was 265 feet away from where the National Guard turned and fired on the students at Kent State. Allison Krauts, she was 19 years old, and she was 343 feet away from the National Guard when they fired. William Schroeder was 19 years old. He was 382 feet away from the National Guard when they turned and fired on the students at Kent State. And Sandra Schuer, she was 20 years old, and she was 390 feet away from the National Guard when they turned around. They were walking up a hill, they turned around, and they fired on the students of Kent State. Joe Lewis, he was 71 feet away when they turned and fired, and they shot Joe in the hip, and they also shot him in the ankle. And Jim Russell, he was 375 feet away. And Jim told me one time that he was running away, and he turned to look back, and one of the guardmen drew down on him and fired a shotgun at him and hit him in the face, and I think it was in his side. And Joe told me one time, we were talking, Joe told me one time that he said he was up front, you know, and he said all I was doing is flipping him the bird, you know. He said I was just flipping him the bird. And he said that he stopped and he turned around and looked back, and he said he was the only one there, you know, everybody else had backed away. And he said he turned back around, and that's when they shot him. And he said that during the trial, they asked the guardman that shot Joe, why did you shoot him? He was on the ground. And this is the guy that shot him through the ankle, I believe it was. And you know what the guardsman said? Everybody else was shooting at him. My buddy Joe Lewis, Jim died, but I just wanted to say the names of those poor kids that got shot and killed for nothing. You know, they were just protesting against the war in Vietnam, which the American people were turning against anyway. And so I just wanted to read their names out because I thought it was important that we don't forget those kids. You know, they didn't get to grow up. They didn't get to be like we are, you know. They didn't get to do that. And so getting back to the war itself, the United States had Americans believing that we were winning the war, you know. And there was one big battle. It was the Battle of Idrang Valley. And this was up in the Central Highlands. And this was, the United States was trying out something new, and that was helicopter warfare. And they thought that they could use their helicopters. They could bring these guys in, drop them off. They could fight a battle, get back in the helicopters and go. They're the new cavalry. It was the first cav is who they were, the first cavalry infantry. And they thought that they could just, you know, bounce back and forth, drop these guys off to battle in different battles. And so the Battle of the Idrang is very interesting battle. What happened is that they had information, intelligence, that there were some Vietnamese in the Idrang Valley, and so they were going to try out their new form of warfare. And so they flew the cavalry, they were cavalry guys, and to fight this battle. But they didn't realize they'd ran into a division, I think it was a division of North Vietnamese soldiers. And so it was a battle, it was the first really set battle between the North Vietnamese soldiers and the American soldiers. And it was a learning experience for both of them, and especially for the Vietnamese. And when you talk about battles, you know, they're bloody. They're just horrible battles. So many Americans died. So many Vietnamese died. They had each other just down. And the Vietnamese, I talked to the guy who was in the battle, and he said that the one thing that they learned is if they were going to fight the Americans, they had to be really close to them. They said that they had to fight them. They had to grab the Americans by their belt buckle to fight them, because if they tried to fight them, you know, away from them, they would get artillery called in on them. They would get the B-52 bombers called in on them, and they would, you know, they would lose their battle. So they learned how to fight the Americans, and the Idrang Valley was the one. And so many of the Vietnamese, you know, I can't remember. There was so many Vietnamese died during that battle, and along with the Americans. And when the battle was finally over, and there was a movie made about it. Mel Gibson, of all people, was in it. I was a soldier and young once, something, I think it was like that. It was a movie that made. And the whole thing was that the cavalry was going to come in, was going to fight this battle, and then they were going to get on their helicopters and go someplace else. But that's not the end of the story. That's only the part of the story that, you know, the Americans came out, they won this big battle, you know, and all that. But, you know, when you came right down to it, nobody won that battle. What had happened was that when the fighting finally stopped, and the Americans they pulled their troops up back on a helicopter. Not all of them got on the helicopters. I think a battalion of them, or I can't remember if it was a battalion or not, they walked out. They walked out. But when they were walking out, they got ambushed by the guys they were just fighting. They got ambushed by the guys they were fighting. What had happened was when they got away from the Idrang a little ways, that the battalion commander, I think it was a battalion or a company, I can't remember that part, but he called all of his platoon leaders, which are officers and commanders, up to the front of the column. When he did that, all the leadership was gone, and the Vietnamese attacked them. And boy, the Americans really lost a lot of soldiers that day, because that was really a bloody fight. And that was such a mess up by the American commander of that battle. And so the United States didn't win that battle either, you know. We never learned anything, the war in Vietnam. We never really learned anything. The only thing they learned is that they could drop bombs on people. And, you know, and how are you going to, you know, you can't do that. Because you're gonna kill civilians, and when you do that, kill civilians, then you're not they're going to fight forever. And I remember talking to a Vietnamese. I met a lot of Vietnamese, old North Vietnamese and Viet Cong soldiers when I on my trips to Vietnam and living in Vietnam. And I remember one time sitting talking to this friend of mine. He had been a North Vietnamese soldier. And I said, boy, why did you guys fight so hard? I mean, we outgunned you. We had more equipment. We had everything more than you guys. Why? And he says, because you were in my land. He said, we would have fought to the very last one of us. And that's what it was. It was a war of attrition. And they outlasted us. They outlasted us. And when the Americans really got tired of the war in Vietnam and really saw what was truly going on in Vietnam was the Tet Offensive of 1968. And the Tet, Tet is a Lunar New Year. And every year before that, there was a peace between fighting groups, you know, because the Vietnamese soldiers, they all wanted to go home to their families because that was all their all of our holidays into one in Vietnam. It was a Lunar Year, that was the big thing. So they all wanted to go home and see their families and the Lunar New Year. But in 1968, boy, that changed the whole war, you know. Americans thought, we see the light at the end of the tunnel. We're winning this war. You know, we're going to be out of there by Christmas and all this. But on that day, I think it was January 31st of 1968, every major city in South Vietnam was attacked by the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong. Every city was attacked. And the American embassy in Saigon was taken over by some Viet Cong soldiers. They took over the capital, the Imperial Palace in Hue. The whole south was on fire, and we were supposed to been ahead, beating them down. We almost had them, and finally they did pushed the Viet Cong back, and the Viet Cong really, really lost. They really lost a lot of their people. It was really strategically, it was a bad move because it just about wiped out the Viet Cong, and the North Vietnamese had to put their soldiers into those groups, Viet Cong infantry groups in the south after the Tet Offensive of 68. It was some Viet Cong, local Viet Cong, which was people from the south fighting, and they had to fill their ranks with soldiers from the Viet Cong. And the longest battle of the Tet Offensive was in Hue, where they'd taken over the Imperial Palace. And it took them a long time, the Marines a long time, to get the Viet Cong out of the Imperial Palace in the city of Hue. And that's where my buddy Steve fought. Steve was in a tank. He was a tanker, and he fought in the Battle of Hue. And he went back. I took Steve back with me. He wanted to go back. He'd never gone back to Vietnam, and he wanted to go back, and he wanted to see that. And so he said, well, we'll start in Saigon. I never got to go to Saigon. Then we'll go to Hue. And we'll spend a couple of days in Hue, you know, and then we'll go to Hanoi. And, well, we got to Saigon. We stayed a day, and then we went up to Hue. And we stayed there like 5 days, you know. He just didn't want to leave, you know. We went to all the places he could remember. He remembered coming down the Perfume River, and exactly we found where the LSTs would land, and they took his tank off. He remembered all that. We went down there, and he drank a beer down there. He walked the route that he had taken in his tank, and he told me that, you know, they were getting shot at and all this stuff, and he wanted to go find the MACV compound, military assistant Vietnam compound, where their tanks had gone. We found that he wanted to go and find where they had set their tank up along the river, and we'd found that. He wanted to find out where his buddy had gotten killed. His buddy was a tank commander, and he said that the tank commander, his buddy, was standing looking out the top of the tank, and he told Steve to pull forward, and Steve said he pulled forward, and he said that the guy got shot, and he fell down through the top of the tank on top of him, and he wanted to find that spot, and we found that spot. And so we spent a lot of time in Hue. You know, he didn't want to stay there, but once we got there, he didn't want to leave. And Steve was a really interesting guy. He had a big mustache, a huge mustache, you know, like a Dudley, not Dudley Do-Right, but, you know, one of those big, long mustaches. And his body was covered in tattoos. And everywhere we went in Vietnam, people wanted to have their picture taken with Steve because he had all these tattoos on, and it was really, really funny to see all these people coming up and wanting to have their picture taken with Steve and his tattoos. And so he, Steve, we came back, and 2 months later, Steve died of a heart attack. And so that was kind of a sad story. And to get back to the Tet Offensive, that really opened the eyes of the American people, and really the American people started asking questions about the war in Vietnam. Why are we fighting? I thought we were winning this war. And the draft really, before, from 65, from about 65 till about 66, most of those people fighting in Vietnam were enlistees, guys who had enlisted to go to Vietnam. But about that time is that they were needing more and more people, and that's when the draft, they started kicking the draft in and drafting all these kids, you know, to go to the war, to go to Vietnam. And a lot of those guys, boy, I tell you, in those infantry units, some of those guys really should have never been in the military at all. But that's where they ended up. They ended up in infantry units, and it was really, really sad that they did that. And so before I get to some of the books I want to tell you about, Tammy, could you play the next one for us? And this talks about what I was just saying about who went to the war, who fought the war, who fought this war for the rich people of this country. Tammy's going to play this song for me. Go ahead, Tammy.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's Fortunate Son by Creedence Clearwater Revival, and he tells it like it is. The war in Vietnam was fought by poor kids, then kids from the working class, and you know, all the rich kids, they didn't go. They got to go to college, and they got all these deferments. But us poor kids, we're the ones that went to that war, you know. And it really makes me angry. I don't support these wars the Americans get into. And the people who really, really make me angry is the guys that had the, you know, they're the big war guys. The guys wants to fight these wars and send our kids and our grandkids to these wars. And when they had their chance to go, they didn't go, you know. But they're willing to send other people's kids to fight their wars. And it's happened today just like it did back in those days, you know. I saw this breakdown one time of who sent their kids, you know, to the war. And it was, you know, it was all the working class kids, all these bankers' kids didn't go, you know, doctors' kids didn't go, politicians' kids didn't go. But one thing was really, really interesting is that career military men, their kids didn't go into service. Military career people, their kids didn't go into the military. You know, that just said something right there. They knew that war was just a horrible thing, and they didn't send their kids to go to it. I want to, real quick here, there's some movies if you really want to watch some movies. And you know, the movies don't really tell you about war. You know, they're just entertainment. And there's a couple here that if you want to watch them. And one's Platoon. Another one's Born on the 4th of July. They're both Oliver Stone movies, which he did fight in Vietnam. Oliver Stone was a soldier in Vietnam. And then A Bright Shining Lie, that's another one. And another one, it was a TV movie. It's called Tribes. And that is really interesting. I think you may be able to get that on YouTube. But the things you really, really want to is the documentaries. And one is Hearts and Minds. The next one is Sir, No Sir. The third one is Dear America. And the fourth one is called The Anderson Platoon. And The Anderson Platoon is the best because it follows an infantry company in Vietnam. It goes with an infantry company, and it's a real life. It shows you what it was like to be an infantryman, and that's called the Anderson Platoon. And if you're going to watch a documentary about the Vietnam War, the Anderson Platoon is the one to watch. And another one is Inside North Vietnam 1966. In 1966, the United States were saying, oh, we're not bombing civilian targets. You know, we're bombing military targets and all that. ABC, I think it was ABC, paid to have this video, this documentary made. And it was Felix Green, Graham Greene's cousin. Graham Greene wrote The Quiet American. And he did this documentary, and it shows what the United States did. The bombing of cities and towns and villages and all the death and destruction that the bombings caused that the American people never saw. And so when Felix Green finished this and he brought it back to the ABC, I think it was ABC News, they said, no, we're not going to show this. You know, we're not going to show this because it really showed what was happening. The United States was bombing civilian targets in the north. Like I said before, 90% of all casualties of war are civilians. And you can see that same thing going on today with the wars that are going on now. It's civilians that are getting killed. And some of the books I want to talk to you about, and a couple of them aren't about Vietnam. And one of the books that I like, and I go back and read it, it's called Civil Disobedience and Other Essays by Henry David Thoreau. That is a great book to read. And the other ones are by Gene Sharp. Gene Sharp is is wonderful, and his is Politics of Nonviolent Action, and it's a three-set book, and the first one is Power and Struggle. The second one is The Methods of Nonviolent Action, and the third one is The Dynamics of Nonviolent Action, and they're by Gene Sharp. And Gene Sharp, we interviewed him one time on this show, Gene Sharp. Those books and Henry David Thoreau, Civil Disobedience, and other essays are really, really good books to read. I highly recommend them. And if you want to read some books about the war in Vietnam, The Things They Carried by Tim O'Brien, all of these books that I'm going to mention, my late wife used them, and when she taught her class on Vietnam War, Pacific University, she used these books. The Things They Carried by Tim O'Brien, Chicken Hawk by Robert Mason, A Bright Shining Lie, which was one of the movies, but it's a book by Neil Sheehan, and that's a really, really, really good book. And then Fire in the Lake by Francis Fitzgerald. And the Fire in the Lake is probably the best book written about the Vietnam War, is Fire in the Lake by Francis Fitzgerald. And it's just an amazing book. Also, I wanted to talk a little bit before we're running out of time, but was the release of the American POWs. The longest held American POW in Vietnam was not a pilot that was held in the North. You know, that was the thing, all those Jews, a pilot, you know, was the longest held. No, it was a special forces guy that had been captured in the Delta. You know, he was there the longest. You know, this poor guy had a horrible, horrible time, you know, and he'd been captured, held such a long time in the South. And as you know, we're running out of time. I'm sorry. I got so much more I want to talk about, but we're running out of time. And like I said, next month, Angie will be back, and she'll be back, so you won't hear me rambling on by myself like I've done for the last 2 months. And we'll be back Friday, June 17th at 9 a.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM. And there it is.
Two or three hours after I left church, I heard this noise, and they were saying, the dike has broken.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Vanport Mosaic Festival, May 27th through May 30th, celebrating the preservation of the history of Vanport and its residents. The Vanport Mosaic Festival is 4 days of art, culture, historical exhibits, lectures, and tours that will engage audiences in a deeper understanding of this chapter in Portland's history. This includes screenings of short documentary films, performances of Cottonwood in the Flood, and much, much more. Again, the Vanport Mosaic Festival is May 27th through May 30th, celebrating the preservation of the history of Vanport and its residents, taking place all over the Portland metro area. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
morning, Cascadia. Today is Friday, May 20th, 2016, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, real community radio for real people at 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM on the web. Weather for today and on through the weekend today, a little bit of chance of showers and otherwise overcast skies and a high around 66. For tonight, again, that persisting, the looming process.